Hi, my name's Dan Seaman.
And I'm Jeremy Austin.
And welcome to the Perseen Podcast,
where we talk to industry experts and explore topics of interest to internet service providers and network experts everywhere.
Hello, and welcome back to episode 8 of the Perseen Podcast. I'm Dan Seaman, Chief Product Officer at Perseen.
And I'm your co-host, Jeremy Austin, our Senior Product Manager.
I think we're going to have an interesting discussion today. We've been advocating for a long time to our customers and the wider industry the importance of latency and what that means to the customer experience. And a while ago, Cloudflare launched a speed test service that has apparently, well, looks like a very big emphasis on measuring latency, loaded, unloaded, and some really other interesting stats. So we reached out to the Cloudflare team, and fortunately, we got a couple of guys that know a lot about this that have joined us, and we're going to talk about their speed test and how it works and why they built it and what it means to customers. So I'll pass it over to you guys, Dave and Carlos, if you could introduce yourselves.
Thanks so much, Dan. So hi, I'm David Tuber, go by Tubes. I'm a principal product manager at Cloudflare, focused on availability, resiliency, and performance. Because I focus on performance, very, very excited to talk about network quality. I helped build the speed test and I own the speed test today. And yeah, just, you know, super excited about network quality and, you know, helping make the internet better for end users everywhere. Carlos?
I'm Carlos Rodriguez. I'm kind of a generalist engineer. I've done system administration in the past and software development. And lately I've been I'm part of the Cloudflare Radar team, and I've been looking at internet quality data, which includes the data collected by our speed test application.
Maybe before we jump in, would one of you like to do the 30-second Cloudflare pitch? Just in case there's one person on the planet who doesn't know what Cloudflare is.
Yes, that's Dupes. As the product manager, I guess that's my job, right?
Yeah, that's your job.
All of my PM friends are going to listen to this and be like, damn it, Tubes, you just really got that wrong. Cloudflare is kind of the next generation connectivity cloud for users on the internet. So we started out as a CDN, content delivery network, making it very easy for, customers or websites to get their content distributed and at performance and availability, save costs. And then we've kind of since branched out to that, have a lot of different use cases now. So we've got, you know, obviously the application services, DDoS, WAF, bot management, all that stuff. But then we've also expanded into other areas, like we've got direct network connectivity, network services, layer 3 DDoS. We've got zero trust network services so that, you know, you can protect your corporate networks behind us in addition to putting your websites on the internet and protecting your public websites with Cloudflare. Really, the idea is that by putting Cloudflare in the middle, you get a whole bunch of security and connectivity benefits at a more efficient cost ratio, and that really just solves all your security problems and, you know, is really just there to connect to the things that matter the most to you. So that's Cloudflare in a nutshell.
One I guess small add-on, also one of the best technical blogs, I think, of any tech company. Cloudflare does a great job in some of those technical deep dive blog posts that if you're interested in that stuff at all, anybody that's listening, it's definitely worth following the Cloudflare blog. It's fantastic.
And I can give a plug. I do use some of Cloudflare services for my home lab, you know, getting remote connectivity and dynamic DNS, some of the, you know, the filtering, the external filtering. Let's avoid attacks from unpleasant countries, that kind of thing. Really love it. It's got a fantastic suite. You know, you don't necessarily have to be, you know, a giant content provider in order to take advantage of Cloudflare's tools.
This isn't an ad. This is
right.
Yeah.
It's reality.
Completely unplanned.
I'm just selling the free blog. That's it. So it's
yeah.
There you go. Yeah, I like the free stuff is really great, and you can get started today. It's really quick.
Yeah, awesome. So speed tests. I think everyone that listens probably has went to a speed test, looked at a speed test, and has some idea of what those accomplish. Obviously, long over the history, been focused specifically on speed, and we're seeing now what I think are the good speed tests, also looking at other dimensions like latency and loss. So maybe if we could start with why did Cloudflare invest in building its own speed test versus the existing ones that are on the internet today? What problem were you trying to solve? What problem does it solve for customers? And what problem does it solve for Cloudflare?
Good questions, all of those. So let's go back to the beginning, and I think about 2020 when our speed test launched, solving a very specific problem. We have people who are concerned about their throughput up and down the Cloudflare. So we build a speed test. You can see your throughput up and down. Our UI designers had a really good idea that we wanted to be a little bit more technical. So they wanted to be able to show kind of the distribution of the samples and the measurements taken. So when you go to this Cloudflare speed test, if you haven't gone, pause this podcast right now, go on speed.cloudflare.com, and you'll see a whole bunch of really cool charts that show the distribution of the measurements that we take. We want to be able to kind of show you, you know, what your general experience is and if your numbers are being boosted or hindered by outliers, stuff like that. And, you know, just kind of like throughput up, down was really the initial goal. And that worked for a really long time. And then I joined Cloudflare, and the PM who built the speed test, he gave it over to me, and he was like, hey, you can do whatever you want with this. And I was like, whatever you want, I said. and then I had a bunch of conversations with a lot of people, including Carlos. And you know, I think that one of the conclusions that we came to is that you know, throughput up down is not sufficient for, you know, a good user experience on the internet. And you know, initially you want to be able to show, you know, throughput up down. But when an end user is running a speed test, there's more to that than just throughput up down, right? Like there's, you know, jitter, there's packet loss, there's and finally there's loaded and there's loaded versus unloaded latency, which is a huge deal. And you know, Dan, hearkening back to the Cloudflare blog, you got a lot of blogs talking about how loaded latency and latency under load is super important. So definitely go ahead and, you know, search those in the blog if you're interested. But the high level is, you know, we wanted to be able to show users what their internet connectivity was good for. And that's kind of where, you know, when Carlos and I, you know, took over, that was the end goal, that like, I want a user who is not familiar with, you know, the technological stuff to be able to go into speed.cloudflare.com and run their test, and they should be able to understand what their internet can and can't do. And that's where we started, and that's kind of where we're at today. That, you know, we've got the network quality scores, which are live on speed, and as well as the deep dive of all of the cool little technical stuff, which you can go and pour into, as well as download your results via CSV. And now we also have, you know, a JavaScript client, which you can, you know, install, and you can run tests, you know, however you want. So definitely just kind of giving people the tools to be able to measure their internet quality correctly, while also for the more technical folks, while also giving the non-technical folks a high-level pass at like, this is what your internet can do. This is what these numbers mean. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we're at today. Carlos, anything else on that you want to add?
Yeah, what I can add is like from the end user perspective, if I place myself as an end user and not a Cloudflare employee, one thing that I look around at other speed tests, and we see upload-download numbers being like highlighted and latency being something that is very... It's there in some of the other mm-hmm. tests, but it's very like very small numbers and almost invisible. And today, well, depending on the area of the world you are, if you are in an urban area, rural area, or different countries, well, in many places, the download and upload speeds are not no longer the main thing you want to get more of. You kind of have enough, or many people have enough. So mm-hmm. latency becomes like the most important thing to get extra quality over the speeds that we already have. So having a speed test with latency has one of like big numbers is it's very important to me as a user. Having a speed test that is both that both shows like big numbers that non-technical users can look at and see, well, these are my big numbers, and having a bunch of charts and details that more technical users can see accomplishes two things. One, the non-technical user can get some information from that test immediately, but that non-technical user can also ask a more technical friend, well, look, these were my results. What do you say about this? And more recently, we added the network quality scores, which kind of automate that thing. Instead of you asking a more technical friend, the speed test does that qualitative evaluation for you.
By the quality scores, do you mean the application? It says like streaming, yeah. Good, great.
Good, great.
What those categories are. Video streaming, online gaming, and video chatting. I think
I love that idea of Cloudflare as your technical friend.
So how do those profiles work? How, like, is that like kind of characterized the requirements of those different application types, and then you just map the results into those kind of categories? Or
yep, actually the definitions are open sourced in our repo, so you can go and look in our GitHub repo for the speed test, and you can see how we're creating those today. And if you have opinions or you think that they're wrong, or you think that we should add stuff or change things, like, definitely, like, feel free to make requests, feel free to reach out, and like we'll be happy to have those conversations with everybody. Like, we want to kind of open source this, and we want to get that. But essentially, all of the numbers and all of the metrics that we collect, we assign them, you know, point values, and based on, you know, the ranges that, you know, they could fall into, and we bucketize them and assign them point values. And for each of the different scenarios, there are different things that matter, right? So for video streaming, you know, upload download latency is important, loaded latency is important, jitter maybe not so much, but, you know, packet loss maybe not so much, but, you know, those things that matter, we assign them, you know, we assign like a score based on those kind of values added together. And that's mm-hmm. different for gaming, and it's different for, you know, video chatting. And so there is overlap, right? Like, the, and I think that the one thing that, you know, is pretty interesting is that loaded latency features heavily in every single one of those, which should communicate, hopefully, to the technical person who's pouring through our GitHub repo. I mean, I guess a non-technical person could also pour through our GitHub repo, but it would have limited value to them. But the technical person should be able to pour through our GitHub repo and see that calculation and glean, oh yes, loaded latency, critical to my success as an application owner on the internet.
And I guess maybe the subtle thing there is it's not necessarily those applications care about loaded latency, but if the connection itself has bad load and latency, some other traffic's going to hurt. Well, I mean, gaming's different, but like, I'm trying to think of a good example off the top of my head, but in many cases, it's the loaded latency of the overall connection, because some other traffic is driving pain to applications versus the actual application itself cares.
Yeah. I just want to mention that one annoying thing I think for most people is we are talking over the internet right now. And well, can I go and open another browser tab and do something that maybe interferes with our conversation, or someone else in my home doing that? Well, I want to avoid that. And I think everybody wants to avoid that. And that's where loaded latency is the key. Can you do something else while you're doing something that is sensitive to to quality?
And the other thing there is that I think that, like, you're right, there are some exceptions. So like a really good example would be video chat, right? Where video chat, loaded latency, if that's high, it matters a lot because you'll see lag, but what really drives video chat like interruptions is the jitter, right? If your latency is spiky and you see bursts of latency, that's what's gonna get you. And so, like, yes, I will concede that, yeah, loaded latency can impact, but I think that, like, generally, I think all applications wanna be faster. And the more you can reduce the lag, like, we just had that like interruption just now where, like, you know, Carlos and I talked over each other, because I heard Carlos talk, and then like 200 milliseconds later, Carlos heard me talk. And so there's this weird thing that, like, I'm going to quote this guy. I'm going to quote him a bunch of times, and he's probably going to listen to this and get really excited about it. Dave Tott likes to say that, like, his goal for the internet is for his band to be able to play on a video chat and have it just work. And that's a pretty great goal, honestly, as a musician as well. Like, that's an awesome goal, and I really applaud that, because it implies two things. The first thing it implies is that performance is predictable, but also performance is optimal, because you want both things. It's not just about being consistent and predictable, because you could have a predictably consistent 200 millisecond end-to-end latency from my house to Seattle Weston, which is right down the street, but that's terrible performance. What you really want is you want predictable performance at its best possible outcome. And that's and that's kind of the best of both worlds that I think we should be aiming for as a community.
Mm-hmm. And when latency rises over, you know, really just a few tens of milliseconds, it actually becomes difficult to play together. As a musician who's played on stage many, many times, there's a reason why when you have groups over a certain size and they have to be physically distant from another, there's somebody who provides optical synchronization by means of a baton or their hands, and that essentially is limited by the speed of light, not by the speed of sound. So I think it's a really a worthy goal that Dave has in mind, and maybe later on we can talk about some of the ways that people are working to head in that direction.
Maybe we jumped a little bit fast there to what loaded, like loaded actually means. So just in case there's anybody with the context there, we're essentially talking about what is the latency when the link is full. So what types of traffic does the Cloudflare speed test generate to try to saturate the link? And then how does it measure latency in parallel to that?
Carlos, you want to take this one?
Yeah. Well, the Cloudflare speed test starts by doing download and upload tests. So pulling relatively large amount of data, not large in as in huge, mm-hmm. but enough to do the measurements, both downloading and uploading. And while it's doing that, it also is opening other connections on the site and measuring how long it takes for, not for the whole connection to be established, because that's not the latency, but for the beginning of the connection to happen. And it repeats that while the other tests are running. So when it's doing that, when the download test is running, that's loaded latency during a download. And when an upload test is running, it's loaded latency during an upload. Mm-hmm. So the main intention here, and I think one important thing about the Cloudflare speed test as it is right now, is that the load that the test is applying in order to measure how latency goes up when the connection is full, is something that, well, at least I used to usually say that is normal load. It's not saturating the connection to its extreme to measure something that is maybe important to network engineers, but it's loading it in a way that is what a regular user would load his connection, like in the real world.
Like an image upload to Google Photos or something like that.
Yeah,
versus a UDP flood.
Yeah, like the really good comparison here is, so like the Apple folks have worked on their responsiveness NPM test, mm-hmm. And we've worked with them a lot, and they're great folks, and you know we want to build the client like theirs because it does a lot of good stuff. But when you look at how a user uses the internet, I always use my mom as the example here because she is a 70 plus year old former doctor. So her technological barrier is quite low. She goes onto Google Chrome and she does everything she needs from Google Chrome. Like she doesn't open like a custom client that opens multiple parallel connections and she can control, and like her client can control the flows with each connection. When you're gaming, yeah, there's probably like an HTTP connection, or maybe there's UDP. Like there are some gaming clients that are moving more to HTTP because they find it to be more reliable. There are some clients that are always going to optimize for UDP, but I can tell you what they're not doing. They're not opening multiple TCP streams at the same time and then saturating them and then trying to find the loaded latency, right? Like that's the drawback of the fully saturate the link approach, because users will get close to that, right? But they'll be limited by the bounds of the technology they use. So if everyone's using Google Chrome, then a test built in Google Chrome is it going to saturate the link all the way? No. But what it is going to do is it's going to saturate the link to the proportion that a regular user would saturate the link. And that number that you get is going to be more reflective of an end user real use case than probably the NPM would. But what the NPM thing will tell you better is your internet connection and router set up for buffer bloat? Right? Like that's the difference between the tests and the NPM module. If you haven't used the responsiveness module, there's an RFC about it and there's an ITF draft. I highly recommend checking it out. If you have a Mac, you can actually do this right now by pausing the podcast, because this will kill the podcast. Pause the podcast, open a terminal and type network quality. Like just one word, network quality, just pause it, do it now, and you'll see the results. And what that will tell you is not, hey, like what is a user experience going to be under load, but what it will tell you is my router and is my internet connection set up to handle buffer bloat? Mm-hmm. And they're two distinct things, and that's good. But the problem is that I think that the internet community tends to err more on the side of like the saturation and the theoretical limits, as opposed to what a user is actually experiencing. And so we get this weird disconnect where like, a lot of people say like, oh, like internet, like quality, buffer bloat, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, but what does the user actually care about? And I think that when people look at speed tests, or when like a normal end user looks at a speed test, they're like, what do these numbers mean? And, you know, us experts can read the runes and be like, this is what this means. But you know, we want to get towards more of a unified understanding of what internet quality means, because that'll make it easier to figure this stuff out. Carlos.
And there's, when you look at the audience for numbers, for any numbers, sometimes the same numbers can be read differently by different audiences. So if a regular user runs a fully saturating test like network quality, like the RPM test, and it sees not very good numbers, well, the conclusion may be, hey, my connection is super, super bad. And from a network engineer's perspective, it can be true when comparing to other types of connections. But what's the reality? Like, it's like I may have a nice car, but if I compare my car with a Lamborghini, it would be bad. And we want to, at least with the current speed test, we want to show numbers that the regular folk want to get, and not maybe not the super best case numbers that a network engineer wants to strive for.
Right. I haven't followed the RPM work lately. Is there open source clients for that now too? Like I'm not a Mac person, so I've read some of the specs, but I have actually never tried to run it.
There's a client in Go called Go Responsiveness, which is
also Will Hawkins. So you Will Hawkins gave a talk at the Understanding Latency seminar. I would watch Will's talk. It's actually right after mine. So you should double up and watch mine and watch his. And then you'll figure out he's got links in his talk to all of the things. So shout out to Will, shout out to Christoph and Stuart and Randall for all the good work they're doing over there.
Yeah, understandinglatency.com. That's the second version of that webinar seminar that just happened this week. Both Tubes and I gave talks, but really a lot of people gave talks and really, really interesting stuff from all around the internet and latency quality ecosystem. While we're still on the topic of the responsiveness, I thought there was a really interesting point that Stuart Cheshire made from Apple, where he talks about how the responsiveness measurement, and Dan, this has been your mantra for a while, that people don't really innately understand lower numbers as better. We think of more as better. And so kind of flipping the latency on its head and turning it into RPM, essentially, round trips per minute. And I should say, obvious to the network engineers in the room, is that the lower the latency, the more round trips you can make per minute, and therefore the higher the number that will be. So that's something that's a little bit easier to understand. You know, going back to your car analogy, Carlos, you know, the difference is that the way that we've been measuring speed and capacity on the internet is somewhat divorced from how, you know, how a regular user's usage patterns would line up, as you mentioned, Dave, but also, you know, it's divorced from how internet is actually provided by the ISP. You know, this concept that you have a connection that is dedicated in most cases, obviously there's some cases where you may have a dedicated channel with no oversubscription anywhere until you get to wherever the service is being provided on the power end. You know, there's this concept of oversubscription that is that we have to share, we've got to share the pipes, means that we don't ever really know precisely, you know, from a holistic sense, exactly how much capacity we have, because each individual connection along the vast web of the internet is experiencing its own conditions, and those conditions are fluctuating wildly from moment to moment. And that's kind
especially
of
when
the
you
hard
get wireless problem. Involved,
and then you get wireless involved, and everybody wants, you know, I talk about this in the field of fixed wireless, where Preseam kind of originally got its start in improving quality of experience for fixed wireless users, is that it's just one or two more wireless hops than everybody is already experiencing. It's exactly the same problem. So it's been interesting to see, you know, but not just over the past few years, we've of course been very excited to see improvements in what Cloudflare's been doing, but the ecosystem as a whole sort of catching up to the, I don't want to say the outliers or the outcriers, you're beating the drum of there have to be better ways to provide internet, but also better ways to really measure that experience. I think there's still a lot of good work to be done based on what I'm seeing. The science that's being done is non-trivial. There may still be some hard problems that we don't solve, but you know, there's a political side to this, which we'll get into. There's a you know, all obviously all the technical sides. There are the end user education side of things. You know, gamers know when their ping is high, but everybody else just wants it to work. They don't necessarily know, you know, when it doesn't work, why doesn't it work well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I fully agree with Stuart that we have a packaging problem. I actually kind of want to go a step further than Stuart, where like higher is better. Like, yeah, but like, this is like using Carlos's car analogy. This is like horsepower, pound feet of torque. And I say this because I've been watching a lot of regular car reviews, and I can say those words confidently and sort of know what they mean. but like, nobody really knows. Like, if you have a 300 horsepower car or a car that does 300 horsepower, what that actually means for you is relatively irrelevant, right? Like, the question that you're really trying to ask is, can it tow my boat? Right. And that's why we have the network quality scores. Right. And like the network quality tests, you know, our speed test was, we initially tried to merge it with responsiveness. And Carlos has a really good story about how, and I'm prompting because I want Carlos to tell that story about how we could not fit responsiveness into a browser. And so we're trying to do that in a client now. But like our belief is that responsiveness is a really great baseline, and their methodology for saturating, and Apple's methodology for saturating links and then measuring on top, is correct. Like, that's how you've got to measure stuff. And our speed test approximates that as best we can. But the work that we're doing, especially with a partnership with MLab, a measurement lab, to basically build the quality scores and build a database of all of this data with all of the quality scores, is really where we want to go. And you know, another thing that I'm going to poke Carlos about to talk about Radar is how we've integrated these quality scores into Radar so that you can see what the quality looks like. And that stuff's really important, because if we have a packaging problem, and we definitely do, just changing the number to be to mean higher is better is not enough. Like, I don't care how much horsepower I have, I just need to know if I can tow my boat. And so that's why we're really focused on the quality scores and the analysis there, because I think that when it comes to an education and a messaging problem, if we can reach the lowest common denominator and get them to acknowledge that, yes, like, I can game good on my internet connection, then that's all they need to know, right? Like, they're not going to care if their bandwidth is high. Right. They're not going to care if their latency is low. They don't know what RPM is. And like, a lot of people are going to say RPM, rotations per minute, like a car, right? Like, no, like, obviously there's more, but like, we, I think, and this is kind of like the person who's delved too deep. We think that like the base definitions are accessible to everybody, but you go talk to somebody who has no idea, and it's just gonna blow their minds. You're gonna like, I was talking to my friends today, and I used the term IPv6 addresses, and they were like, I don't know what that means, but it sounds really important. Mm-hmm. Like, we, I think as a community, need to take a step back and start thinking about like what our users care about. Mm-hmm. And then like, we've got the knowledge, like the data's there. We just need to do a better job of packaging it and framing it to the end user, because that's how the real change is going to get made.
Right.
Well, I'm going to pick up on something that Jeremy started with, which is the end users, or most people, don't understanding what performance or internet quality means. One of the things, and I think it's kind of, this is kind of a, like maybe a detail, but I find it interesting. Is one of the things is when you tell something, well, I'm going to sell you a 500 megabit connection. Well, it's mega, it's millions of bits. and it's a very large number. But when you say, well, your latency is 200 milliseconds and it's bad, it should be, I don't know, maybe 10 milliseconds. We're talking about fractions of a second. 200 milliseconds is under the reaction time of a normal person. So it seems like a very, very, very low number. Why does it matter that instead of half a second or a quarter of a second, it takes a tenth of a second? It seems like almost irrelevant. And picking up again on the car analogy, in cars, we usually talk about, well, how long you take to go from zero to, in my neck of the woods, is 100 kilometers an hour. Maybe it's 3 seconds, 6 seconds. And some people, at least, many people have a kind of an understanding, but seconds is a number that people can understand, but milliseconds is not. And it's actually, that's one of the things that I think it's crucial when we talk about latency and how much better you want to get your latency. Mm-hmm. I think the numbers and the scales of the numbers are important for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. It sounds like there's a story there about RPM in the browser that Tubes is looking for you to tell.
I think it's a very, very, very quick story. Tubes, of course, wanted a responsiveness, an RPM test inside the browser. But one of the problems with that, and cutting the story short, is that, well, if you think what it would mean to do that inside a browser, so saturate a connection so bad that it, in many situations, or for most people, will make it unusable for a bit, what would that mean for a browser? If the browser allowed you to do that, the level of control over the underlying connections to be able to do that, but that would mean that random websites could just break your connection.
Could DOS your network, your internet connection. Yeah.
So the browser obviously doesn't allow you to do that. It doesn't allow you to control which connection you use to do a request. The browser chooses which connection to use. It doesn't allow you to force the browser to create a new connection. It doesn't allow you to force the browser to tear down a connection. And all of that for security reasons. So it turns out we can't really do an RPM test or responsiveness test inside the browser. Maybe, I'm not saying it's not possible to devise some other algorithm that can approach that, that can eventually be implemented in the browser, but RPM itself, at least as far as I can see for now, it's not something that we can do inside the browser. You need to do it outside.
I, for one, will vote that we do not bring back ActiveX.
Yeah, don't bring back stuff that can just break stuff from random websites.
So on that topic of, I guess maybe one little technical mini deep dive, I noticed your speed test measures loss. How does it measure loss if the browser is controlling the TCP connections?
That's a very good question. So for that, we actually have so Cloudflare hosts a Tern server. So what we do is we create a WebRTC connection and to our Cloudflare Tern server, and then we just send 1,000 packets up and then measure how many we get back. It's very, very simple WebRTC packet loss measurements, but it gets the job done. And
it's a way to do UDP.
Right, that's kind of right. Exactly, it's kind of one of the only methods you have to actually do independent packets that could be lost to measure loss.
Yeah, but it's super great for that stuff. And so, I think.
And for anybody listening, Tern servers involved with NAT traversals. If you want to go read some specs and extra complicated stuff. So
we also have a blog about how we've launched a Tern server. So go back to the blog, go ahead and search for Tern server on our blog, and you'll find that blog post, which is how we figured it out that existed too. So
So
before the break, can we talk a little bit more about radar? I know we haven't really dived into this yet, Carlos. So in this context of where users are doing speed tests, even if they're not, a perfect measurement of what quote the internet is in air quotes. But it's at least exemplary of some of your browser experience. How do we get that information back into the hands of people who can do something about it?
Well, first just a quick introduction about what radar is. Well, radar is a, it's hard to call it a product. It's a platform, or it's a website where Cloudflare showcases or tries to describe how the internet is or looks like using, for the most part, or almost always, just Cloudflare data. And on the internet quality area specifically, we have a whole section dedicated to showing results that come from the speed tests that people do at speed.cloudflare.com. That section has two subsections, two parts. One is data coming directly from the speed tests. We show, like, for every country and every network, autonomous system, every network or ISP. It's tricky to call an autonomous system or a network an ISP because many ISPs have a bunch of AS numbers. Right. But we try to show it in a way that, well, my ISP here that I pay for to get internet in my home, I want to see how that ISP looks like to other people in a simple way. Not I don't want to see tables of numbers and things that I don't really understand. I just want to see, is it a good ESP compared with its competition? Are there other ISPs that I know that are available in my area? If I know, I want to see how they look like. And for that, we show one of the troubles we had that we already mentioned is usually large, better, more is more. So bigger numbers are better. And we wanted to show latency and download speeds in the same graph. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to show something that when it's bigger, it's better. And something else that when it's bigger, it's worse. Mm-hmm. We wanted to show the two things. But I think we kind of got something that works. So if you go to radar.cloudflare.com/quality, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I have the URL here. You'll see like a single graph that describes your country or the network you're in if you search for it. Mm-hmm. The data that we use from speed.cloudflare.com is also publicly available through Measurement Lab. We both use that data in Radar, and we send that data to Measurement Lab to become public. It's anonymized data, so you don't know who did the test, just know the results. And yeah, the challenge there was to, like I said, for anyone more technical or less technical to be able to go there and see something about either their own country or their own ISP and get a rough idea of, are they getting a good service? Is there a better service around me or not? And we also we show there something else, which is called the Internet Quality Index, that I can talk about a bit later, which is different from the speed test data.
What are some of the other tools that Radar has? It looks to me like there's quite a few there, and who are they targeted at?
Well, depending on the section, there's probably a different audience. If you love routing and BGP and knowing about route leaks and stuff, there's a section for you there. If you just want to know, is the traffic in my country going up? Did it went down or up from some day like Black Friday happened? Did that cause a spike in traffic or the traffic to go down because people kind of change their behaviors? So there's things for like a less technical audience, like superficial things or more simpler things about the internet, traffic going up and going down. And there's also things for a more technical audience, like routing incidents, things related to attacks. So if Cloudflare has that data, and if that data can be condensed in something that can be published to the outside without revealing anything about our customer base or whatever, it's just... Right. Public data and generic data about the internet. If that data exists within Cloudflare, Radar is supposed to publish it and make it available. And if it's not there yet, it will be there sometime in the future.
Fantastic. So, and I took the opportunity while I was preparing for the show to just go look up my local ISP here on the IPv6 side. They have very little usage, so there's really not any usable data. Like, at what size, given that a lot of our customers at Preseem are relatively smaller ISPs, like, at what size are they likely to have enough data, or are there ways that they can actually help provide additional data to Cloudflare beyond, just beyond what the average speed test that's being run?
Well, that's a very hard question to answer. It's kind of, what's the threshold above which the data is good? It's like, if anyone that works with data can answer that question, like with a number, I want to know. I don't know it. Well, let me think if I can provide some kind of an answer to that. So the data that we get, it's mostly or almost all the data is about requests that reach Cloudflare. So if you have a very small customer base, obviously there will be much less data reaching us. And for some types of data, we cannot actually work with very low amounts. Like, for example, requests. If you're showing like amount of traffic along a day or a week, people browsing websites, and when those websites are Cloudflare customers, which there's a high likelihood.
High likelihood, yes.
Yeah, many of them being our customers. Well, when you go to a website, there are plenty of requests that are made. So even a few thousand customers may be enough to generate enough data to see a graph of requests or traffic along the day. For the types of data, like for example, speed test data, we have to take into account that what are the people that are doing the speed tests. If there are very few people doing speed tests, the data may be skewed. And we try to convey that in different ways, depending on the graph we're showing. We try to convey if the data is strong enough to be super reliable, or if it's just something that you can look at least, and see, well, it may look like this. It's more information that I used to have when I start with zero information. So smaller ISPs are hard to show those kinds of measurements. The large ones, the data that we show, it's pretty reliable. And for large one, it doesn't need to be like a US countrywide ISP. Like Portugal, where I'm from and where I'm at right now, it's a 10 million people country, and we have three major ISPs, each one with around 2 million customers. And for those, the data that we have is more than enough to see what they look like. So if you are around that size, around the 2 million or 1 million mark, the data that we show is pretty reliable. If you go below that, it depends on the type of data. This is the honest answer. And when you look at the graphs, it's supposed, if we are doing a good job at Radar, it's supposed that you look at the graphs and you can immediately see how much reliability do you want to give to those numbers. Like if they are, you look at it and say, well, this is probably the truth, or, well, this is useful information, but I need to know more.
Okay, thanks and welcome back. We're talking about speed tests today, and now we're going to move a little bit over to kind of the future of speed tests, and not only Cloudflare's, but more generally. And one area there that's super interesting to me, because I'm kind of a protocol guy, is seeing what's happening with QUIC and HTTP3 on the internet. And I wonder how that will figure into Cloudflare speed tests, or maybe speed tests in general going forward, as we see more and more traffic that would traditionally have been the land of TCP only being UDP QUIC connections. Is there, do you guys have any thoughts on, you know, more broadly or Cloudflare specific of, do we need to have QUIC speed tests on the internet?
You know, definitely something just good to have, right? You know, we're seeing more applications take dependencies on HTTP3, which is great. HTTP3 is awesome. So as a result of that, we should definitely have speed tests for that. We actually have a public speed test endpoint. I think it's, well, Carlos, it's h3.speed.cloudflare.com.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
It's experimental.
Yeah, it's experimental. It's worth noting that it's experimental, but it does exist. There's a lot of, and you know, like eventually, like we're going to get there and we're going to, you know, maybe make it not experimental anymore, but you know, it still works. You can go there today. Thing that, you know, we want to embrace the future and we want to embrace all that stuff. The internet is just also very slow to embrace change, right? IPv6 was introduced in the 90s, and we've got what, like 20-30% adoption. Like HTTP.
Depends on how you look at it. I just published a blog post a few minutes ago about it.
Yeah, so smarty pants over here. But even HTTP2 was introduced in like the 2000s, and like that's a little bit easier because the Chromium library is default to HTTP2 and all this stuff. But like still, like, you know, HTTP2, there's still a significant amount of 1.1 out there. So like protocol adoption and all that adoption is going to happen at a global, you know, distributed pace. So we're building those tools, right? And it's not to say that we're not. And you know, we'll make them available as we perfect them and roll them out. But you know, this is the Windows legacy problem, that the old stuff's there forever, and we got to support that.
Yeah, fortunately, it's all additive. Like you can't stop doing the other things. But I think it's interesting with QUIC and HTTP3 that it does seem to be a fast, well, I don't know if it's a faster ramp, but definitely faster than IPv6. Much, much faster than IPv6.
One of the challenges with current speed tests, and I think most of the speed tests also do that, not just Cloudflare, but we kind of use HTTP. In the current speed test, speed.cloudflare.com uses HTTP 1.1. We kind of use HTTP as just like, it's a connection. We, It's not really testing HTTP. It's just a way and an easier way to control creating new connections, because we know that the browser will probably create another connection mm-hmm. when we want it to. If and when we move on to use HTTP2 or HTTP3 to do the tests, one of the challenges is, are we still testing the connection, or are we testing how a browser or the platform that we use to run the test handles the traffic? So if you're using HTTP3, well, most of the requests will go through one or just by maybe a pair of connections or a few, very few connections. HTTP2 is the same thing. Well, when you get larger, bigger latencies or whatever numbers you get out of it, how much of that is because of the service that your ISP is providing you, and how much is from the way that the browser, if you're using a browser-based speed test, how much of it is the way that the browser manages the connections? Because the browser optimizes the way it manages connections for its use case. So the use case is browsing the web and doing stuff that people do inside the browser. And if you're trying to measure what your ISP gives you over that platform, mm-hmm. you need to ensure that you're actually measuring what your ISP is right. giving you, and not what the browser is optimizing for.
And not
for.
What your 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi at home, you know, that's also, about
and also
problem.
That.
Yeah.
And that, that's what help you. And that's what I'm saying is that maybe for at least for me, the main reason why I just said that the HTTP3 test that the our speed test has is experimental. It's mostly because of that. You most likely will see numbers that are somewhat different from what you see in the official default speed test. Mm-hmm. And those numbers are maybe or probably not because of the connection, because it's the same connection you're using, the mm-hmm. internet service, but it's because the way that the browser does manage things, and also the way that the server side manages things. So you start to go up in the stack and start to see more effects from the way that those upper layers of the stack decide to do things to optimize for something that may not allow it to show what's the raw details of your internet service.
And actually, and just to put a finer point on that, like if you act like Apple's responsiveness test actually got developed because their goal was to measure buffer bloat, and their goal was also to measure the latency and the slowness that they induced on their server side. So the story that because I was there for Christoph's Nanog talk, that basically what they wanted to do was figure out, hey, like we've got Apple TV and we want you to be able to seek through the video and start at any point and you would have no buffering. And that's their end user goal. And like that, when you think about like user objectives and you know what users care about, that's what users care about. Like no buffering, can I no buffer? Right. And like a good RPM measurement means really no buffer. And so like what they did was they used that number and they used that test to optimize their CDN for delivery so that they could get rid of that no buffer. And that's how they've gotten that number. So the interesting thing about, and just to kind of go back to what Carlos is saying, that like speed tests, yes, there is a component of the network, but there's also a component of the server side, and there's also a component of the client side, which is why a lot of these things get really muddled. And you ask any person who works in an ISP and they'll tell you, stop sending a speed test, because what they'll often tell you is 50% of the support tickets that you get as a result of bad internet quality, they're gonna tell you, well, are you close to your Wi-Fi router? Or do you live in a house with solid plaster or brick? Like, if so, get an extender or get close to your Wi-Fi router. And then the user will do it and be like, oh my God, the internet magically got better. It's like, yeah, because wireless sound can't penetrate solid walls. Like, but that's not stuff that end users know. And actually, if you go to the Cloudflare speed test there and you click on the network quality, what does this mean? How can I fix this? There are some things that you can suggest, like get closer to your Wi-Fi router or buy an extender or mesh Wi-Fi.
Maybe the important thing underlying this what you were saying is the awareness on the end user part is key. So regardless of what the numbers mean by themselves, so is this particular number very good or not so good, or whatever, which different people will interpret numbers in different ways. Maybe the really important part is awareness. Users being aware that there are very several characteristics that their service provider should be taking care of. They should be giving them the fastest download and upload speeds possible, but they should also be giving them the best latencies or the lowest latencies that they can provide. And with that awareness, or at least some level of awareness, people can make their own minds about what they think is adequate, good or adequate, what they want to get from their providers. And I think one of the goals of any speed test that it's targeted at a wider audience should be to help users become aware of the metrics that matter, even if the users don't understand the details of that metrics specifically. Make them aware that in specific case of latency, that latency is a thing, that latency underload is also a thing, and it's not about just the two speed numbers, is also about those other two numbers. And if your ISP isn't caring about those numbers, then it's a bad ISP. Mm-hmm. So, and then when they talk with their friends and when they see results from their friends, they are better positioned to go to the market and
put a little market pressure on.
Yeah, and buy something that they feel it's the best thing they are getting, and they're not being deceived by big numbers that sound like very huge, millions of bits or whatever, or gigabits, and they kind of look beyond those things and understand what they are.
Sounds like a really good lead into policy.
That does sound like a wonderful lead into policy. You read my mind. And you know, to get back to your point of sort of like an end user competitive choice, a selection that could be made, that's only going to be valid for parts of the world where there really is a choice to be made. And one of the things that we struggle with in the United States is that, you know, since here we represent three different countries just in this conversation alone, and Canada has this problem too, which is that as soon as you get outside of the populated areas, you generally end up having very little choice. You may have a satellite provider, which, you know, Starlink is doing a better job these days, but even now the FCC is declining to fund Starlink, despite it being one of the best actual potential solutions for the truly rural areas, you know, below five people per square mile. But in this context of how do we actually get internet to people, the FCC is less concerned about choice right now as it is about some arbitrary measurement that is they're recommending is to be handled by a speed test, which would be great for Cloudflare, great for Ookla, right? Let's talk a little bit about what's going on there with you know, the BEAD funding. I know, Tubes, you have some perspective on, on this comment process. The FCC opens up what they do here to commentary. Can you walk us through what's going on, Tubes, right now?
Yeah, it's like basically a couple weeks ago, the FCC opened up a request for comment to raise the minimum broadband standard from, I think, 25 megabits up, 3 megabits down, to 100 megabits up, 20 megabits down. And the justification for that was, well, the BEAD program mandates 120. Everybody else mandates 120, but the FCC standard does not. So should we raise it? And, you know, that this is like the kid who's like, well, I did all my chores and I did my homework and I cleaned my room. Can I have like a cookie for dessert? Like, obviously the answer is yes, right? Like, more is better. And like, I know that there are a lot of comments out there that says like, oh, we need to think about network quality as well. And it feels like a yes and, right? Like, this is one of those things in my view that is like, yes, we want better broadband distributed everywhere, but that's already being handled by the BEAD program. And I think that if you look at the FCC comments and it's a very narrow scope, you're like, hey, like, we've got this designation and this other designation for BEAD funding is higher than what we are designating. Should we just raise it to what they're designating? Sure. Yes. Good. Better for the consumer. Right. Like, even if, like, you know, going back to Carlos's point, like, even if they'll never use 120 right now, maybe not, but, you know, 5, 10 years down the road, maybe 10, 20 years down the road, maybe This is the first time that the FCC has raised this designation in 15 years. Mm-hmm. Somebody's gonna tweet at me and be like, "Tubes, you need to do your history." And like, I was a teenager when that happened.
It wasn't 15, but it was within my working memory that when they bumped from 10 to 25.
Yeah, so it's been a really long time. This just feels like a natural net positive, but like it's a yes and, right? Like, should they raise? Yes, but they should also consider network quality. They should consider what the user experiences are of this stuff. And they should also consider who's getting this stuff. You know, you talk about the single, you talk about the people who have single providers. There are a lot of people who don't have any. I think I told the story at Nanog when I was giving this talk. So my wife's family lives in Northwest Arkansas, about 20 minutes outside of Bentonville. So like, it's a really quick drive, right? But they have no wire, they have no fixed internet providers. They have to use cell providers because when I asked my father-in-law about this, like, there's an AT&T. I was like, there's an AT&T connector right down the street. And he said, and I quote, "Our neighborhood went to them and asked, and they said that it wasn't financially feasible for them to lay fiber to them. So they've got the wireless cubes, like the Verizon or the T-Mobile or the whatever. That's what they've got." And like, that for me is really where the BEAD program is like targeted for. Like, yeah, you could buy, you know, a cube, and some people can't even buy the cube. Like, I think that, you know, the digital divide for me is like, yes, we want to go from one to many in all of the places that we can, but I'm still focused on zero to one because there's a lot of people who don't have it. And so saying, you know, zero to one is going to be 120, that's a really good starting point. And like, that essentially is basically, you know, building out the infrastructure so that everybody's got the level playing field from the jump, that you don't have to worry about if you're in, you know, rural Northwest Arkansas, or you live in, you know, downtown Seattle, you can get comparative internet and the access to information that you have can be equivalent. And when that happens, good things happen.
So you know, to go back to your point about yes and, you know, BEAD wasn't implemented or wasn't specified by the FCC, it was specified by NTIA, and just has a speed test requirement, doesn't have any type of quality requirement, even like the previous round of funding, which had latency and loss requirements. So can we talk a little bit about, you know, the comment that you've been involved in on this this redefinition? And because to me, it feels a little bit like we are sort of taking this opportunity as a community to say, well, yes, we definitely should increase this definition, but that's not the whole picture. We missed an opportunity. We missed several opportunities. Probably for the past 15 years, we've been missing opportunities. Yep. What are some ways that the community is trying to raise awareness, Tubes?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I remember, I think, for the broad, so specifically, so like there's been a couple of instances where we've done this. So I know that like Cloudflare, we've published our comments to the FCC around broadband labels, where we specifically called out network quality and loaded latency as being a huge need. And I don't remember if they accepted that, actually. I should need to go back and look at that, but like that we definitely called it out there. I think we've been pretty consistent with folks on our side about saying that network quality is vital. You know, and in especially here, you know, if like, you know, speed tests, throughput up down is great, but, you know, performance and, you know, user experience are going to matter greatly. Like, we just spent the entire time talking about, you know, how latency impacts applications. That's still true in this part of the conversation as well. So if, you know, we're under, like, even if we give people 100 megabits up, 20 down, or 100 down, 20 up, and their loaded latency is like 400 milliseconds, they're arguably still underserved. Mm-hmm. So like, I think quality of application and quality of experience is a very difficult thing to measure. But I think that we as a community need to stop worrying about, I think we need to align on that is the important thing, which I think that we're there. And I think that loaded latency is kind of the metric that we're aligning on, which is great. I think that my feeling is, and my hope is, that we move from like loaded latency is something that users care about to, we've got this definition for quality of experience that users can objectively say is like, this is good versus this is bad, and here are the internal numbers, and these are the numbers that need to make work. And I think that that's going to be a lot more well received by policymakers, because if my 70 plus year old mother's technology barrier is low, like the average policymaker's technological barrier is probably similar. Mm-hmm. My name is Tubes, and every single person I know quotes that Ted Stevens line. because you know what? Like, that's what he thought, and that's what most people think.
And he wasn't wrong.
He wasn't wrong, but like, still, like, we, like, everybody in the internet community makes fun of it. Like, oh, like, policymakers don't understand the internet. But they don't.
But is that their fault?
It's not their job.
Yeah.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. when you look at what their job is to pass laws that benefit their constituents, in theory. And what we need to do as a community is better communicate how this stuff benefits their constituents, because I don't think that we as a community have done enough of a job. And we can throw numbers and we can throw studies at people, but unless we can definitively say that, like, we've got ranges that say this means good for streaming, this means good for video, and this means good for, like, chat, like, it's not gonna get into their head. And I think that, like, it's like, we gotta go very basic to get them to buy in. And Carlos has a thought.
I was going to do a small provocation, which is, and what about the technical community itself? Because even in the technical community, there's maybe plenty of people that are, like, some awareness about these measurements of quality. And for example, if you are in a rural area away from everything and the only access technology you have is something wireless, you're always going to suffer from higher latencies than other access technologies. Wireless is a common medium, which many people don't understand exactly what that means. Mm-hmm. So there are restrictions. And on the application side, on the technical side, people producing applications and designing protocol. I believe people designing protocols are aware of this, but usually when people develop applications, they also need to be aware that this quality numbers matter. And how can they think about that? Because if they think about their applications just for the people in highly, in dense urban areas with fiber, high-speed fiber and low-latency fiber, if they only think about those types of customers, their applications will, well, always be worse for many other people outside of those areas. So even the technical community needs some awareness about these matters, like, too.
And here's an example of that. So when Lai Olson from Measurement Lab and I gave a talk at NANOG in Atlanta about our collaboration and what we were trying to do, I could see the line forming as we were giving our talk, and every single one of them was like, but you know, my speed, I have 1 gig up and my speed test shows this, and I've got, and like 10 gigs up, when is Cloudflare speed test gonna support 10 gigs? When is Bliss this? And I was just kind of like, these people don't like our talk. And Lai said something really great, and I'm gonna paraphrase because I could not do it justice, but she basically said something to the effect of, well, 99.9% of the internet connected population has 100 megabits per second or less. So why are we trying to optimize for a gig? Mm-hmm. And yes, I get it. We've got big, thick fibers that we wanna saturate, and that's cool, and I'm down for that. But to what Carlos said, like, and this is what the BEAD program is all about, and this is what all that stuff is, that, like, we can either focus on the 0.1% of people who got a gig and can do really great, or we can focus on the significantly larger group of people who either have really bad internet or don't have anything at all. It's a very easy choice.
Yeah, and even when we get to this, Stuart's future world of this AR, VR all the time, it's going to be latency that drives that. You're not going to need 100 megabits of video feed. Your eyes can't take that in. So it's really going to still be that, as you say, 100 megs and down that we're going to have to be optimizing for. I briefly talked about this yesterday in the Understanding Latency webinar, or 2 days ago, where I was saying, we don't have the applications currently that drive consumption of those big fat pipes. If you're using the big fat pipe as a proxy for lower latency, then you're failing to understand the real source of the problem here. we're getting the signal to wrap up. So I wanted to give you guys a last chance to plug anything. Carlos, I did see your new blog post. I'm going to read that as soon as we're done recording.
Well, my plug is Radar. I suggest people to go Radar and browse around. I expect them to find at least something that is interesting, hopefully surprising in a good way. We have plenty of stuff for kind of most audiences, and all of that data is also available through our API if you want to do something that we are not doing right now.
Awesome. Cool. Radar.cloudflare.com. Tubes?
Yeah, I want to plug a couple things. So the first thing I want to plug is our collab with Measurement Lab. To get our speed test data collabed with MLab speed test data. So you can do some network quality analysis with a whole bunch of data sets, which is really cool. You can see the network quality scores, which is also really cool, and kind of see how they vary and build some cool stuff. And if you find anything cool or you have any questions, like reach out to me at tubes@cloudflare.com. It's pretty easy and nice, simple to remember. Mm-hmm. I want to plug that. I want to plug Will's talk at the Understanding Latency panel. Download Go Responsiveness, go play around with it, and kind of get acquainted with, you know, like latency under load. It's a really easy way to do it. And also, you know, if you haven't done it again, do two things. The first thing is pause this podcast or just wait for it to end, and then run, go to speed.cloudflare.com, play around with speed.cloudflare.com. Also, if you have a Mac, type in network quality into your command line, play around with that, see the numbers, experience it. It's a really interesting experience. And just like play around with this stuff and, you know, you learn a lot.
100%.
Well, thanks guys. Thanks for your time. I hope that was interesting for everybody. If anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out. And I feel like we could keep going for a long time, but we must be well over an hour already. So it's probably time to wrap it up.
Any questions for the team here at Preseam? I'm Jeremy at Preseam.com. And we've got, of course, Dan at Preseam.com. And the website for this is Preseam.com/podcast. Of course, as always, please subscribe to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts to get regular updates. We're going to try to keep these episodes coming and have, you know, additional fantastic guests like Tubes and Carlos. I want to thank you guys for spending time with us today. It's really fun to see people doing things that are adjacent to what we're doing and where we really obviously care a lot about the same things. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. It was great to be here.